When Jennifer Shaw's son, Toby, was diagnosed with a severe sensory processing disorder, Jennifer found herself wondering, why is God doing this to me? Or even more, is God really there? And does he care?
You have that little doubt in the back of your mind, and yet he's shown up for me in ways that I cannot deny. And so it has forced me to live my life in a whole new reality. You know, I say I have a whole new perspective on what life is about. And for me, what became paramount is to know Christ and to make him known. And that is what the Lord taught me in that valley.
This is Family Life Today. Our host is the president of Family Life, Dennis Rainey, and I'm Bob Lapine. We'll hear today from two moms who have learned a number of lessons as mothers of special needs children. Stay with us. And welcome to Family Life Today. Thanks for joining us. You know that I tend to be, just by temperament, by personality, an optimist. I see the bright side of things, right?
I would affirm that about you.
I remember I could take you to the place where I remember being was a beautiful spring evening. Marianne, my wife, and I were out walking around the neighborhood with our daughter Amy in the stroller, and it was warm and the sun was going down, and it was just we just moved into a new house that we'd had kind of built the way we wanted it built, and I remember having the thought, life is pretty perfect, and then this thought hit me, and that doesn't go on forever.
Mm-hmm.
And it was like, where did that come from? And I wanted to rebuke that spirit, you know, that evil spirit from putting that thought in my head. But
sure.
But I stopped and I thought, nobody gets from birth to death with sunsets and warm breezes and without a bump in the road. And it was interesting because God was preparing us at that point for bumps that were just ahead that I couldn't see. But up until that point, life had been fairly ideal. It's helpful to know ahead of time that some of this is coming. You may not know what the circumstances are going to be, but to anticipate, we will experience bumps in life, in our marriage, in our relationships, as we raise our kids. If you know that going in, then when the bumps come, they maybe take you a little less by surprise.
That's right. And I think the issue with marriage and family and the bumps or storms or however you may describe them, you got to have a builder of your life, your marriage, and your family. And frankly, I don't know of one that can compete with Almighty God
right.
and with Jesus Christ. Now, that may sound a little absurd to state it that way, but people build their houses on the sand. That's what Jesus said a lot of folks do. They refuse to do what God says to do and acknowledge him as the builder of their homes. And we have a couple of moms with us in the studio who both have experienced, I'd have to say, is more than a bump, some major challenges in their families. Jennifer Shaw and A.J. Becker join us on Family Life Today. A.J., Jennifer, welcome back.
Thanks so much for having me.
Thanks for having me, too.
Yeah. And both have written books. Jennifer's written a book called Life is Not Typical, and AJ has written one called A Good and Perfect Gift. They both are moms of three children, and both are moms of a special needs child.
Yeah, Jennifer, it was your third pregnancy. Your son Toby was born, and 6 months in, you realized something's not right here, but it wasn't until he was two that you got a diagnosis, and the diagnosis was SPD. What's SPD stand for again?
Sensory processing disorder.
So anything he touched or felt kind of was, he was feeling it wrong and processing it wrong, and life was hard for him, and it was hard for you, and you weren't sure what to do with that. And Amy, Julia, you shared with us that your daughter, your firstborn, Penny, was born with Down syndrome, and the first time you were aware of that was 2 hours after she was born when the doctors came in and said, we see some characteristics here that indicate maybe Down syndrome. But in both cases, these special needs that these children had all of a sudden cause you to recalibrate everything about life.
It does, Bob. And AJ, I wanted to ask you a question. You know, I mentioned earlier that you're a graduate of Princeton Seminary. You'd studied the scriptures. You'd actually had a test during your pregnancy to determine whether your baby was perhaps a Down's baby.
Yep.
And the results of the test came back?
Yeah, so I, in retrospect, did not think very much about sticking out my arm to get some blood drawn for a prenatal test and thought, well, information is always helpful, and so why not have this information? It was a test at that point called a quad screen, so looking at four different hormone levels in a mother's blood to try and identify potential conditions in the child. Mine came back as a 28-year-old woman, I should have had a 1 in 1,000 chance of having a child with Down syndrome. And the test came back, it said you have a 1 in 316 chance of having a child with Down syndrome, which is still a very low chance, and yet three times higher than it should be for someone your age. So we were offered an amniocentesis, and we declined, mostly because it's an invasive procedure, and we knew that abortion was not something we would have wanted to discuss, but also because we didn't think that the test was actually demonstrating that our child had Down syndrome. So in some ways, I can look back on that and say there was a warning sign. We did have a level 2 ultrasound, which is a more comprehensive ultrasound examination in which they were looking specifically for Down syndrome, so measuring different aspects of Penny's anatomy. And it's actually wonderful to look back on that day because we had also asked if we could find out our child's gender. And the technician who was doing the test, we asked her just to write it down and put it in an envelope so that Peter and I could be alone together and not in the exam room while that was happening, while we were getting that news. So she, and she shouldn't have said this, obviously, but said this baby may be many things, but it does not have Down syndrome. So we felt as though that had been a reassurance, that test was wrong. And apparently in about 15% of ultrasound examinations, they will not find Down syndrome, and that was true for Penny. What we did do afterwards, though, is open this envelope, and it said, "Buy pink, it's a girl." And at that point, it was that day that we named her. And I'm so grateful, in retrospect, that our prenatal testing, quote-unquote, failed. Because what it meant was that we were prepared for our daughter, we were prepared for a baby, we were prepared for everything we needed to be prepared for, because there weren't any significant health problems that probably would have come up on an ultrasound. And so it was not until we had a baby that we were holding in our arms that we had to figure out what does it mean to love a child who has a diagnosis. So that was my experience with her.
So you and Peter never played the, well, what would we do if? I mean, here they tell you you don't have a child with Down syndrome. You didn't have a conversation saying, have you ever thought what we'd do if we had a Down syndrome baby?
You know, we didn't go very far down that road. I think for both of us, there was not a question about terminating the pregnancy. And so it didn't seem like a conversation we needed to have until we had more information. And then once the ultrasound seemed so definitively to say no, we didn't really think about it again. It was more in my subsequent pregnancies that we had to ask those questions, because having a baby with Down syndrome puts you in a category of women who are considered high risk for pregnancy. So they said I had a 1 in 100 chance of having a baby with Down syndrome again.
Wow.
And so that was when we had to ask a lot of those questions. Well, what if we have another child with Down syndrome? Is that fair for our family? Is that right? Can we handle that? That was when all of those questions came up. And then again, in my third pregnancy as well.
You would have still stood on the side of protecting life?
Absolutely. I felt like I have a friend who had a baby with Down syndrome, and she said, you know, I don't know if I could have two children with Down syndrome, which means I can't get pregnant again. So that was her choice. My choice was, I think we could receive another child, however he or she might come. Would I choose to have another baby with Down syndrome? Probably not. But am I open to that? Absolutely. But it did take a while, a lot of heart and soul searching. But I felt like the option was, if we were going to get pregnant again, then we were going to be having that baby. We had the option of adoption. We had the option of having one child. I mean, there were some other options that we considered, but that wasn't one of them.
I have, Bob and I both have a couple of friends who started a ministry called Tangled House. Mm. And it's a ministry to marriages and families that have special needs children. And I was with one of my friends the other day, and he told me that 1 in 10 children being born today in our country are special needs children. And he said the needs of these marriages and families today across the country are urgent. They need instruction about how to make their marriage and family go the distance. I want to ask both of you, and I want to begin with you, Jennifer. What was the impact of this on your marriage? I mean, it had to be dramatic.
Well, statistically, many marriages for special needs families fail. And I've had that question a lot, did you have a lot of difficulties in your marriage? And, for me, all I can say to people is it can't have no effect. It's going to have an effect one way or another. And in our marriage, it actually strengthened our marriage. And I don't give any credit to myself in that. To be real honest, my husband stepped up in a way that was truly sacrificial and was the hands and feet of Christ to me. I mean, I think partially because I was already in such grief for my dad and I really didn't have a lot of capacity left, but I was never in any doubt that we were in this together kind of a thing. And I knew how much Nathan loved Toby and that he loved Toby every bit as much as I did. And he took that opportunity, I suppose, to step up and be the dad and the husband that he knew God had called him to be. And he really served our family. And so my respect for him was tremendous because he was in grief too, but I never felt like we were divided there. I mean, we were a team working together for Toby. And I wish I could tell you why it worked that way other than we both had our eyes on Christ. And so obviously I think that's key because I would love to be able to share that with other families. I don't know how that happened, but I do know that my husband is a man of integrity and a man of God. And I really credit him tremendously with even getting through that time.
Practically speaking, it really sounds to me like your husband was a fellow burden bearer with you. He entered into your grief with you. And it sounds like that would occur naturally, but that's not necessarily the case.
Well, everyone's afraid of pain. No one wants to feel pain. And Toby was, to be blunt, Toby was a lot of work. I mean, Toby needed one of us all the time. And there was a lot of therapy to get to. There were a lot of appointments to keep. There were the other two girls that needed to be cared for while somebody was with Toby. I mean, I never felt alone in that. And I think a lot of times maybe husbands think, well, I don't want to get in the way or I don't want to do it the way she doesn't want me to do it or whatever. But just the fact that I knew, if I can't get to every appointment, you're going to cover it. If Toby's crying and someone else is crying at the same time, you're going to go grab one of those kids, and it wasn't that he was my backup. He was my partner, And so our marriage is much stronger than it was before this happened with Toby. I would have said we had a very happy marriage before we went through all of this with Toby, but now we have a very solid marriage and I know the character of my husband and I respect it very much. And that has been a tremendous blessing that God brought out of pain.
AJ, what about you and your husband?
Yeah, I can echo a lot of what Jennifer had to say. We also had a grief experience together before Penny was born. She's named for her grandmother who died of liver cancer 2 years before. And I think having gone through that together and seeing that we responded very differently and quite frankly judging each other for our different responses with his mom, actually, having worked through that enabled us, when Penny was born, to trust each other to respond differently. He went through a severe grief for about 24 hours in the hospital, and he emerged and was really fine. And that's been the case for the 7 years that she's been with us. It took me about a year. That's a long time to be in different places. But because there was no judgment from him towards me in that year, he actually gave me a great deal of hope that I would one day be able to see her as the person that she was first. And over time, that did happen, but it took a lot longer for me. For us, actually having other children, I don't know if it's because of having a family of three or just that we, as Christians, I felt like we were prepared for the major bumps of life, that there was a lot of scriptural and community support for a baby born with Down syndrome, a mom who's died of cancer. But honestly, the support for my son, you know, cried for the first 6 months of his life. I didn't know where to go for help in the Christian community for that. And it's not to say that people wouldn't pray for me in that situation, but those have been the more challenging aspects of parenting when it comes to our marriage, has been the very ordinary life of a parent. Whereas the more dramatic has, we've felt more equipped to know how to handle that.
I want to go back and just underscore a statement you made, because I think, and I'm not saying Jennifer and her husband are atypical, but I don't find that most couples do what you guys did, Jennifer, where you go into it together, you shoulder it together, you come out together.
I would agree with that, because I talk to a lot of people, and I don't think that is quite the norm.
Right. More are like AJ and her husband, who process grief differently in different ways and different paces, and as male and female, as mom and dad. I mean, Barbara and I have never faced anything with any of our children of this magnitude. We faced some tough stuff. And I'll tell you, it's really easy for a husband and wife to miss each other in the valley. I mean, it's like you can be in the valley, but you can be going in two different directions. Have you experienced that?
We experienced that more, I would say, with Peter's mom's. We knew she would die, and so as we were anticipating her death, that was where we experienced that, I don't understand who you are. I don't understand how you're processing this. He saw me as someone who was not trusting in Jesus because I was so sad that she was dying. And shouldn't I trust that she will be with the Lord? And there's so much that's good about that, even though we're sad she'll be gone. I saw him as denying his emotions and not being willing to enter into the real pain and brokenness of this world. And we could have done that same thing with when our Penny was born and when she got her diagnosis, because it was a similar pattern where I got somewhat mired in grief. I spent a year trying to figure this all out. And he, I could have said, was just being in denial about the feelings he had for our daughter. And yet, our experience with his mom had enabled us, I think, again, just to trust each other in that. So we were very different.
And I have to ask you, who was right in how you processed it?
Both of us.
That's a great answer.
One of the things that Peter says, which I think picks up on something you were saying, Jennifer, is just that, you know, if there are cracks in the sidewalk, it's severe weather that will expose those cracks. And so there are cracks in all of us. And I often say that disability is God's magnifying glass that shows all of us our humanity. And what it does is it magnifies the brokenness that is within us, but it also magnifies, I think, the gifts that we all are or can be. One of the things that I've thought a lot about is how to hold in tension being created in the image of God and the glorious possibilities that come with that, but then also being these fallen, broken creatures who are desperately in need of help. And I think he and I err on one side and the other, but if we are able to bring them both together, then we have a deeper understanding of what it means to be human in God's sight.
It's where two are better than one.
Indeed.
Yeah.
You know, I so appreciate what you both have shared here today. I'm going to ask you what would be an impossible question to truly answer. But you both have been taking places that, it's a deep valley around a child. You can't fix it. You can't make everything perfect. Your expectations have to be adjusted. Family has to be adjusted. Marriage has to be adjusted. But in the midst of that, you both have seen God. Now, I want to know, how have you seen him in a Down syndrome little girl? How have you seen God in a little boy who has difficulty with sensory input, with processing that?
Well, I have seen God in so many places. as you start looking for God, if you're looking with expectation, he's going to show you himself many, many places. The main place I've seen him show up is in my own faith, that he has, as I said, transformed some of the things I thought were true about him, I now know are true about him. And that is a rock that I stand on because I don't have that. You know, you have that little doubt in the back of your mind, and yet he's shown up for me in ways that I cannot deny. And so it has forced me to live my life in a whole new reality. You know, I say I have a whole new perspective on what life is about. And for me, what became paramount is, you know, why are we here is to know Christ and to make him known. And that is what the Lord taught me in that valley. And the other way that I have seen the Lord daily is in Toby, because he has done a remarkable thing in my son's life through therapy and through God's intervention, where we have seen such healing in Toby's life. And Toby himself has such joy. And as he walks around my house, and he's now completely functional, I mean, he's now pretty much a typical kid, I see what the Lord has done for him, and he is my daily reminder of God.
I want you to share the story of Toby, who had not said virtually anything, right? Mm. Hadn't said anything to you?
Yeah. Oh, he didn't have sounds. I mean, he, you know how babies go ba-ba, goo-goo, and they get their sounds.
Right.
He didn't even have sounds.
Right.
Yeah, he was 24 months. He had no sounds, and we started him in therapy. And 6 weeks later, I was reading him his bedtime story, and every night I would read him a story, and I would sing to him, and I'd pray with him, and I'd put him in bed. And
this was after he'd had some
six weeks of therapy, and he had no sounds. And that night I prayed with him, and I said, "But I love you, buddy. Good night." And he, out of the blue, he turned around in my lap and patted me on the cheek, and just out of nowhere he said, "I love you, Mom." Just a whole sentence all at once. And
first sound he'd made.
Well, I mean, he'd cried.
Wow.
He'd cried a whole lot. But he it was very slurred. I mean, he didn't have any ability to articulate well, but
you heard it.
I knew what he was saying. And of course, I started sobbing, which scared him to death. And I thought, great, now he'll never say it again. But, I mean, from that point on, by Christmas, he was speaking in full sentences all the time. By that spring, if you didn't live with him, you wouldn't have known he really had any issues. And he was in therapy for years. But, I mean, he's been discharged from all of his therapy now for 2.5 years. He's in second grade, and he plays soccer. You know, my son, who was terrified of grass, that we might make him touch grass, that he would panic and cry, and now he plays soccer. You know, it's a miracle. And I see God in him every day.
Yeah. AJ?
Yes, it's hard to know where to start. I certainly, Penny has a spirit to her that helps me to see God, I think similar to what you were saying. I remember when she was very little, she was, even at age 2, very enamored with Jesus. And I remember we had this book, it was a wonderful book that Moody Publishers puts out, but all about these Jesus stories, but they never show Jesus's face. You always see him from the back. And she just said over and over and over again, "See Jesus." And similarly, in that same book, there was a story of the Good Samaritan, and she was appalled as a 2-year-old that there was no one who would stop and help the man. And she kept saying, "Me help, me help, mama help, mama help." It was just, and even to this day, if she sees an ambulance, she will say, "Mom, we need to pray." There's just this attentiveness to the needs of others and faith that God will respond to those needs. So there's some sort of spiritual acuity that I think she has that allows me to see the personal nature of our God as someone who's pretty cerebral and who went to seminary and so knows all of these abstract ideas about God. It can be easy for me to forget that God cares about us in a personal way, and that God actually in his being is able to attend to the very mundane details of our lives. And Penny reminds me of that day in and day out. And, you know, she has really thrived. We have thrived as a family because of her presence in it, not for that reason alone, but certainly in part because of that.
Do you think Penny knows and trusts God better than you do?
Oh, that's a great question. Certainly trusts. I think, you know, I do know more about God.
Right, right.
In terms of an actual personal relationship with God, probably, that is probably true.
I want to thank both of you for sharing your stories. We were commenting earlier before we came in here, I can't believe I get paid to do this, to come into the studio. And I really do feel like we've had the opportunity to be able to hear a couple of stories where it feels like the Holy of Holies. It feels like God's here. And you ladies are a couple of heroes, and your husbands and your families. Thank you for displaying the glory of God, the image of God, what He's really like to our listeners. Because I know there are listeners facing issues right now that they're going to look at differently because they've heard your hearts and what God has done in you. Thanks for being on Family Life today.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you.
I've been sitting here thinking about moms I know who are mothers of special needs children, and I've been thinking, I want to get copies of your books so that Marianne and I can pass those on to those moms and let them know we're praying for them, just as a way to encourage them and let them know that we understand the challenges that they're going through. Jennifer's book is called Life Not Typical. Amy Julia Becker's book is called A Good and Perfect Gift. And we've got copies of both books in our Family Life Today Resource Center. Go to familylifetoday.com. You can order copies from us online. Again, the website, familylifetoday.com. Or call toll-free 1-800-358-6329. It's 1-800-F as in family, L as in life, and then the word today. Ask about the book Life Not Typical and the book A Good and Perfect Gift when you get in touch with us, and we'll get those resources out to you. And we hope you can join us back on Monday when we're going to talk to a young man who knows firsthand the power and the joy that comes from being a part of a forever family. You'll meet Ryan Bomberger on Monday, and I hope you can be here for that. I want to thank our engineer today, Keith Lynch, and our entire broadcast production team. On behalf of our host, Dennis Rainey, I'm Bob Lapine. We will see you Monday for another edition of Family Life Today. Family Life Today is a production of Family Life of Little Rock, Arkansas. Help for today, hope for tomorrow.